Welcome, 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 everyone. I'm your host, Henry Arslayan, and welcome to the Future of Money podcast. My goal with this podcast is very, very simple. It's to go deep in some of the biggest ideas, trends, and developments we are seeing in the field of crypto, and hopefully empower you with this information and let you make your own decision on what their impact can be on the future of money and the future of finance. To do this, I invite each week one of the leading figures in the global crypto community to have this one-on-one conversation among crypto aficionados and discuss some of these topics. My guest today is the CEO of one of the most well-known crypto derivative trading platforms in the world, and actually the inventor of the Bitcoin perpetual swap as well. Alex Hoppner, the CEO of the BitMEX. Alex, great to have you with us today on the Future Money podcast.
Thank you very much, and happy to be with you. Awesome.
By the way, Alex, I have to say, I was looking at your bio before the show. It's very, very impressive. Obviously, now you're the CEO of BitMEX. What many people may not be aware, though, that previously you spent many years at Börse Stuttgart, Deutsche Börse, and I even saw that you even have some like patents and inventions to your name. How did all this evolve into crypto?
Long story. So I started. Actually, I never wanted to get into the whole exchange business. The company I was working for was bought by an exchange. So this is how I came to exchange. And then it happened to be that I got all the insights from how you structure markets and capital markets. And that I found very interesting. And so I had a long run through the various stages at Deutsche Börse. And during that time, I always came up to, okay, where are maybe interesting markets that you can structure where market efficiency is not gained, but there's a huge market demand. And so that brought me ultimately to gaming, because I'm a gamer, I'm a gaming geek. I'm playing more or less everything that you can play in game. The whole monetization of games is, since the beginning of the mobile games, it's a little bit difficult, I put it that way. So a market where actually can use your or monetize your game time was something that really would have loved. So this is when I kicked off this idea of structuring the first regulated market for trading of in-game items of the games industry, which was 2013-ish around. And this is where also that patent came from. And we had some very good success in the beginning, but unfortunately that was a little bit too early because we were already embedding tokenization into that. Because to get this uniqueness of an individual item, so you can imagine like in an esports championship, you acquire the one soccer ball that is the final golden goal of the championship, and you can buy that or auction that one, and you have it at home and your wall spinning around. So that was the ultimate idea. But that was just too early. So everybody wanted to be second, nobody wanted to be first. So unfortunately, I'm not in gaming anymore, but just on a private basis. And that brought me actually to Börse Stuttgart, where I was leading the digitalization and the revamp and making Börse Stuttgart one of the first classical exchanges go all into the crypto world. And with this, we rolled out the Bison app and all this. And but from the development of the market, the next big thing to come is naturally derivatives. And so this is why it brought me ultimately to BitMEX, because I mean, when, if not there, I mean, as you said, so the inventor of the perpetual swap, the icon of derivatives markets. And with the development and maturity of the classicals, let's say the spot side, the derivatives is the next big thing. So in a sense, a quite steady flow, although the start I never would have imagined.
Yeah, when we come back, I'll ask you about gaming and NFTs and the whole, what's your views on it? But how was the first, I'm very curious, when that phone call came, or I don't know how they approached you, of, okay, what were you be interested in BitMEX? How was your reaction? How did that happen?
So the first call I really had, I was on vacation. I had a first call with Arthur, and that was really awesome. I mean, Arthur is an icon, and having a chance to talk to somebody like him is really eye-opening, definitely. And you every so often get a chance to maybe lead one of these kind of companies, and that naturally directly inspires something with you. And so I was directly hooked by the possibility to get over. But then naturally, it always takes a little bit of time to flesh it out and to get to the point. But that was really something where you can imagine. I mean, nearly everybody being in crypto loves to work with such a player in such a game. So in a sense, quite direct and obvious, but it was an awesome discussion. And I can say really half of the first meeting that the two of us had, we were really laughing about the ambition and the ideas that we both had. And this is, I think, where you directly then come together, or you don't. In our sense, we did it.
Well, I mean, let's put it, if Archer, the founders of BitMEX, were 10 years ago, would you have hired them? I mean, what do you like about them and their vision? Is it their mentality? What really strikes you about them?
I think the drive for change. I think this is the ultimate thing. What was driving me and the drive I was trying to instill with the whole gaming aspect and then later on also with Börse Schicker was the possibility for a change in the financial world through this technology, where the technology, the whole blockchain and crypto technology, the protocols can be an enabler, an accelerator to change the financial industry. Because in a lot of aspects, it's a flawed infrastructure and flawed process, and it's not very inclusive. It's exclusive. It's elitarian. It has a lot of negative aspects, although it's a centerpiece of a lot of aspects of our life. And I think that this whole crypto blockchain development has a once in a lifetime chance, yeah, to make something up out of that. Yeah, and I think Arthur, Ben, and Sam, they really, from the beginning, they had this drive to change, and this is what they also instilled with me. And that was why I found myself mirrored and really at home to now extend the journey and speed up the change that we can achieve there.
So actually, it's funny you mention the vision of change, right? I mean, I think it's five years ago this month is actually the Bitcoin perpetual swap was literally invented. And it's quite remarkable that your product, I mean, the perpetual swap has become such a big, you know, primary piece of the global crypto ecosystem. I think what's your view on that? I mean, let's take a step back. If we could maybe give it to our audience a quick summary of what is the perpetual swap, the Bitcoin perpetual swap that the BitMEX pioneered, but also how do you see the future of crypto derivatives? Where do you think it's heading and how are things going to evolve?
I think one of the centerpieces maybe is the change of the margin of the way how margining works with futures, which is a total contrast to the classical financial world, where the risk of, let's say, of the product in the classical world, the risk of the product is a market risk, yeah, a full market risk, where we have seen things happening like Lehman or Man Financial. Wherein the margining in the perpetual swap is a very individual risk. It's not directly a risk to the full market. And so from our point of view, and also from my point of view, this is a much more healthy product for the market integrity, but something where the classic players naturally will have to adapt to. Yeah. And having that as a product which is in this sense much more accessible to everybody. Now leave aside the leverage, and having a different approach to the market risk is very, very the groundbreaking thing, at least for me. And that's something that has a chance to really also fully change how we do futures for classical products, yeah. Or classical non tokenized products in the future. What I see from a development really is that. There's more and more push into the derivatives markets coming from the regulatory maturity of the spot side. So more and more regulators adopting to spot, more and more institutional players and more retail players coming onto the spot side. And that naturally will then instill the drive for hedging purposes, more linear products, probably like options like structured products, but a lot of push into the derivatives markets. And this will be the next thing. So we will see maturity on the derivatives market side too, to mirror that. And as you will know from the classical side, the futures market is by far larger than the spot side. So this is also what we can probably envisage going forward for the crypto side too. And so this is really where the structure the structure of how derivatives work in the crypto world will probably set the pace then also for the maturing of the market. Now, for the regulators, it's a pretty big thing because they have to adopt to this new margining system and to this new margining approach, which is a different one. And I mean, different means you need to educate, you need to, yeah, to bring on board, you need to show that there's a different risk attached to that. And as I said, from our point of view, a much more healthy one than we've seen it in the past.
It's very interesting. You mentioned, obviously, I think for a lot of our listeners here, but a lot of perpetual swaps, obviously, there's no There's no settlement date, for example. So that's why somebody can hold this perpetual swap. That's what they name perpetual. And I think what was very interesting with BitMEX is literally, I think you guys pioneered this funding rate mechanism as well. You know, where how every 8 hour actually the mechanism would kick in. But do you think we will one day see traditional financial institutions launch perpetual swaps? Do you think it's something we will eventually see, or for the foreseeable future, they'll stay on the CME model with when there's expiries and the likes?
No, I think you will see classical institutional players going on to the perpetual swap side with this cycle, then having an end time cycle. Yes, I think there will be a demand for going in that direction because you see just the retail interest into that. And I think that as we are in a new product universe, as we are in a new financial universe, B2B follows B2C. And that means that with the demand, a high demand of retail players coming into that market, you will see institutional players following that one. And as the demand is for the perpetual products, you will see that they will warm up to that one. It's probably still a little bit of a change because they are slow to react to that one. But it comes a little bit with, let's say, the wish to get access to this new client group. We shouldn't forget that probably in the first time, I don't know, at least that I'm in the financial industry, you'll see that the crypto direction is actually growing the pie of customers. Beforehand, everybody was fighting around the same more or less group of customers. All of a sudden, we are addressing a completely new customer group. And so institutional players, they, for the first time, they have now the chance to really tap into an expanded universe of products for the first time that are very interesting to clients, but also client groups. And we shouldn't forget that beforehand, classical players, they were inventing structures like design your own product because they were unable to design new interesting products anymore. I mean, the market is flooded with products. We have millions of financial products. Yeah. Honestly, nobody wants and nobody cares about. And here's all of a sudden, here's a product, the perpetual swap, everybody's longing for. We see huge volumes. Okay, in comparison to the classical side, it's still not a lot, but we're speeding up tremendously on that one. And so I think, yes, to come back to your question, yes, I see that they will warm up to that, that it will adopt to that, and they will also offer that.
So on that point, Alex, I want to ask you, obviously, the last couple of months, there's been a lot of announcements from regulators against retail public trading crypto derivatives, right? And what's your view on that? We saw the UK do that, Hong Kong do that, many other markets have done that. Do you think that is over-protectionist from the part of the regulators, or do you think there's the genuine demand from the retail public, as you pointed out, to trade crypto derivatives?
I think two things. Firstly, from the retail side, I think there's high demand for derivatives products, or like option structured products, but also derivatives products or futures. I think that the regulators in the first step will adopt just the classical approach that they have to this new methodology or this new technology. We shouldn't forget that regulators regulate function and not technology. So they don't care whether we use blockchain protocols or whether we use classical infrastructure. They just care for the function. As long as you offer futures products, you need to, let's say, fulfill the license requirements around this. Now, in the classical world, as a normal retail client, it's pretty hard to get your hand on futures. And so they just, in the first step, they adopt to this regime. You got to learn to walk before you can run. So I think we need to work with the regulators. What is the right level of education needed to trade more sophisticated products? But then we should have the sophisticated trader should be our aim and not the fully protected one. And the sophisticated one can make his own business decisions. Now, there needs to probably be some guardrails around this, like data protection and information security. But besides that, overprotectionism does not help. I mean, we see in a lot of countries a capital markets culture that's not really supporting the capital market, which in a sense it's wrong. And so we should do a lot to sophisticate our traders and educate them. And also work with the regulators that they don't fall back to the over protectionism that we see in some of the classical securitized products. But my strong assumption is that for time being, we will have to live with that.
And do you think, Alex, traditionally that the crypto industry has taken the wrong approach with regulators, you know, where they're often more confrontational or even trying to avoid them? Do you think that was a strategic bad decision, or they should have decided to work with regulators earlier on in the evolution of the crypto ecosystem, especially for derivatives, actually?
Tough call, because regulators is really, I mean, they, and don't get me wrong on that one, I think they have the least one to drop right now, because whatever they do, if they regulate too hard, they are the bad guys. If they regulate not hard enough and something happens, there's the bad guys. So there's a lose-lose situation for them, which is not always easy. So while we all complain about this, we should bear this in mind. I think it's very hard for them to work with hypotheses, like how would it be if we could have, would have, should have. Yeah, they can much better work with something that, where you clearly show this is how we do it. Yeah, and so I think there needs to be a certain aggressiveness in doing it and then showing it to them. Whether it's always been the right time to approach them, well, yeah, in hindsight, you're always smarter than that. But I think it's good. You need to push, yeah, because you have to just show that this is working out. And sometimes you also have to test and try and see what works out. So generally, I would say no. But yes, on the derivative side, we could have approached them maybe a year earlier or two.
And what do you think if tomorrow morning, let's say, you get promoted from, let's say, I don't know if it's a promotion, but let's say from your role as CEO of BitMEX, you become the head of a regulator, for example, tomorrow morning. What would you do? I mean, what if you had a blank piece of paper and you can actually tell you, Alex, we're going to let you regulate now the crypto derivative space. What would you do? Or what would you think we would love to do if you're in charge of a regulator?
Oh, that would be nice in a sense. Oh, but I don't want to go now. It's too good to be with BitMEX. No, this, I think when I had several discussions with, for example, the German regulators, they were very much aware about what's happening there. And they very much acknowledged also directly. They said, okay, guys, we firstly need to implement a framework and then let us exploit on the possibilities of the technology, which we will not directly do in step one. Making an example. When in the classical world, you have this whole clearing and central counterparty to mitigate for counterparty risks and pricing risks and market risks until the execution of the trade, which is T+2. Yeah. Now, in a T+0 instantaneous world, a lot of this framework, which is transported now from the classical world onto the crypto world, is not necessary because it's not inherent. Yeah. There is, let's say, for the classical part of the product, there is no lending necessary. Yeah, it's not necessary. You have instantaneous trades. Yeah. Now, ideally, we jump directly to the point that we kill these inefficiencies in the processes and also in the license requirements, which is probably not coming directly. So in that sense, I think we're a little bit too slow. And I think also there's something where we as regulators, or we, if I would be sitting on the regulator side, is going to happen. Yeah, there's, I mean, you need to be part of the development. Otherwise, the development will happen without you. And then you have to face with what's coming out of that one. And that might be much harder than being part of the transition, where at least some of the regulators I'm talking to and we are talking to, I really have the feeling they want, but they are also in a very tight political framework, which is not always easy. But this would at least be what I would be doing.
Super interesting. And actually, let me ask you about the business directly, and let's talk about BitMEX for a while. Is of course, I think since you took over, you started making a lot of changes. I mean, you joined BitMEX, I think, in January, right? And I think we'd love to you can share with us some of the plans you have for the future, because you discussed some of the new products you want to launch and some of the offering that BitMEX is not only derivative exchange anymore, but it's broader than that. Can you share with us some what you have in mind there?
Yeah, sure. So as I said, and I think the development is going on that we will see a tremendous demand of derivatives products. So one thing naturally is to expand our product universe there to more linear products, but also structured products as well as options. But also expanding on that, I think we need spot capabilities to on-ramp interesting underlyings and alternative cryptos up let's say security tokens or tokenized securities. If you want to offer that on a global basis, you need a sound and secure custody solution, which we have for our current environment, but you need to have it properly built up and set up to allow for token on-ramp as well as for fiat on-ramp. Given the developments on the regulatory side, I think we need to have a brokerage part, might be even resulting into a prime broker that allows you to really not only address one venue, but as a client to address several venues, with one entrance, and also having then the possibilities to have cross-portfolio margining possibilities, cross-product and cross-portfolio, and maybe even cross-platform margining possibilities. Okay, this is probably some let's say, future game, but you need to have a direction that you want to head to. And this, when you set up such an environment, you create a data lake that allows you to support decision-making in trading as well as market developments, sentiments, social sentiments, trading sentiments. So naturally, we want to offer information products around this. And as we just touched into that, I think that especially when you go to more sophisticated products, you need an educational arm around this to educate your new traders on your products, but also maybe have contact points for regulators, maybe even politicians, universities. I think we need to do much more on this information and transparency side. And for this, we just formed an academy to suit that pace. So what we want to build, and when you look at the, let's say, more successful other players out there in the market, you can see that a lot of them are tackling more or less the same direction. So we want to really be not only a derivatives exchange or leading a derivatives side, but we want to be a full service crypto environment that allows our clients to participate on all the possibilities, including lending and staking. And actually, I think this is very important. It's not only targeting institutional clients, it's retail and institutional clients. BitMEX before was very much focusing on more the institutional side, the pro trader side. And I think we need to broaden up our scope there because there's a high demand from new traders coming into the market, and the educating them and guiding them through the product universes of spot and derivatives is, I think, from my point of view, very important for us going forward.
But Alex, do you think, I mean, I spent many years of my career in a prime brokerage space, right? And I have to say that when I look at the crypto ecosystem today, especially with the rise of crypto funds, I think it's absolutely inevitable. We will need to have a margining, cross margining, the kind of the prime brokerage model that we have that is absolutely necessary. Because if you think about, let's say, your future roadmap, right? If I look at the traditional financial institutions today, do you believe any of them would be able to build this in-house, the traditional banks, a crypto cross margining, cross desk or offering, if you want, or they will need to work with actually crypto players like yourselves that have this native infrastructure they can build on?
I think it will be very hard. I think a lot of them thought about like, yeah, let's wait. Let's sit on the sideline. We can afford to be second movers. We have so much money. If it really works out, we just acquire some of these players in the future and then we're done. Happens to be that they get maybe acquired because the crypto guys are much more, let's say, valuable than they are. So maybe one or two players missed the train. I think from some of the announcement you hear that some of the classical investment banks try to go into that space, whether they really manage that, we've hardly seen this. When you look at the developments, mostly it is that they try to acquire a smaller player who's already achieved into that, because the incumbent's problem of the structure being so tight that they can't break out of that one, most of the times it's only possible if they really tap into external areas. And that means acquiring something or partnering up with them something. Maybe they achieve it on the custodian side, because that's really core banking business. But my strong assumption is that they will weigh into partnerships. And you can see it from the classical exchanges. How many of the classical exchanges really embrace this crypto development? Very, very, very few.
And what do you think that's the case, actually, Alex? Because you touch a very good point. I get it with the banks. It's difficult because of the infrastructure they have today to actually come in, not only get into crypto. Custody is probably the first step, but not only offer trading, but also offer the prime brokerage model actually can be quite challenging. But you know, especially in the crypto model where, like say retail public or, institution has direct link with the exchange, unlike the traditional world where there's the brokers in the middle. Is there a reason that you think the traditional exchanges have not been faster in this area? I mean, at Stuttgart, probably you guys were one of the leaders in actually some of the work you've done. Actually, you're probably at the cutting edge of it. But do you think the traditional exchanges have missed the boat, or they will catch up? Or that's it, it's the same model as the banks. They'll need to partner with crypto players from that perspective.
I think they missed the boat. And sorry to say, I can say it because the two of us are exactly on the same page. It's gray-haired old man. This is the reason. Sorry. I mean, they look at their term. They see they have another 3 years. Yeah, then they have all these bad press around, I don't know, is financing terror? And then they think, well, should I do it? No, my term is still 3 years. Somebody else should tackle it. From my point of view, sorry to say, it's really as easy as that. Change starts from the top. If something's not happening, just look upwards. This is where it is. And maybe this is a generation topic. You'll see with another generation of managers, we have a lot of good discussions, let's say, with the middle management. Very often it stops there. And is very, very slow to adopt. Now, nobody cares that let's say up until now, we financed all the negative stuff with US dollars. Since it's presumed to be financed with crypto, everybody's getting a huge fuss out of it. I think it's exactly that. You need to embrace the change, and change starts from the top.
Yeah, I think that scenario definitely a lot of legacy financial institutions. It's a problem not only for exchanges, but I think a lot of financial institutions. The term of any CEO right now at a bank or anybody in management position, you're absolutely right. The career risk is absolutely not worth it. But actually, on that note, then, I mean, so if you're not looking at the exchanges as your potential competitors or even the banks, who is your competitor? Like, who when you look in the rear view mirror, who are you really paying attention to that you think can come in? Be a serious competitor to you over the next couple of months and years?
I think, first of all, nobody. Not because they are not competitors, but because in the first step, you don't lose, quote unquote, against the others. You lose against yourself. So you need to structure yourself and execute. That's the first thing. And if you get your execution right, I think you can grab a lot of the space still, because the crypto market is still expanding and growing. So you can grow without even interfering with your competition right now. Until really the market is too small for the number of players in the crypto field, I think we can still go a couple of years. Now, okay, some classical players will come into this world, but they lack the speed. They lack the direction top down, and they lack the speed. I hardly see anybody there, not because they generally don't have the ambition the capabilities to do it. It lacks this top down direction. To say, okay, we go into that space, we fully go into that space, and we push hard for that. There's probably some who can manage that, but it's missing this clear direction from top down to really wanting to change this. And whether this is now for a bank or a classical exchange, I mean, how many classical exchanges are going there? Probably CME a little bit. Börse Stuttgart, but from the spot exchanges, who's else there? Yeah, Nasdaq announced some stuff, but not really. So it's not like hundreds of exchanges pushing into that field. And that allows naturally the new exchanges, new markets to evolve a lot. And in that sense, the regulation helps, because a lot of regulators are working already on security tokens and tokenized securities. And what a lot of these classical players are forgetting is that currently for a lot of these markets, you have interoperability. So you can trade on various exchanges because your products are, let's say, tradable on all the venues. Now, if, for example, a security token would come up and would be only traded on BitMEX Spot, then it's only traded on BitMEX Spot. There is no other place by definition. There is no interoperability on day one. And that means you have very rarely the moment where you can grab exclusive flow. And that's something which is very interesting, naturally, for us new players, and very, quote unquote, dangerous for the classical ones, because beforehand they could always grab back. But through the different protocols, if I have a product on my protocol, which is only on my exchange, that's it. Then it's on my exchange. That's it. And so there is really a tremendous chance for change, coming back to the points where we started with. So the possibility of a fundamental change of the industry is really there. And especially now with the first regulators like Germany coming up with tokenized securities or security tokens, like Switzerland and Germany, I think this drives a lot of that change.
So actually, Alex, before we continue, we need to take a little break to thank the sponsors who make the show possible. We'll be back with after this few words. This episode is brought to you by ASX Customer Support. ACX enables crypto platforms to offer 24/7 customer support to their clients in multiple languages, from English and Russian to French and Arabic. ACX is the only provider globally that is 100% focused on the crypto industry, with 100% of customer agents trained in crypto. ACX enables crypto platforms to offer customer support using actual humans that are knowledgeable on crypto. Looking at improving the customer support experience of your clients? ACX can help. Visit them at acxinternational.com. I'm back here with Alec Hodler, the CEO of BitMEX. Alex, we were just talking right now about some of the competitors, and obviously, especially a lot of legacy competitors that you know you may be looking at. And obviously, you mentioned that these are not obviously a big threat from that perspective. But what about the other big crypto derivative exchanges, right? I mean, after BitMEX pioneered the perpetual swap in May 2016, you know, you had OKX who did the same in 2018. You had Binance who did it in 2019. FTX as well, right, in 2019 as well. Hobie, and the list goes on and on. From these derivative exchanges, what impresses you in them? How do you see them in the quadrant of players that are playing in the crypto derivative space?
I think what impresses me on them is naturally the speed to introduce new products. I think this is something which is very interesting in the market. Now you can question in every other product whether liquidity is really, let's say, as good as it should be. But I think in a retail-driven market, being able to roll out interesting new products fastly is absolutely key. And that's something that we will have to grab back together. We'll gradually get now into that to get back to speed. But this is something I think which is very important. To be able to list new products very, very easily. I think in a sense the crypto development is bringing exchanges back to the core of the existence. When you look at back when exchanges were formed, that was really to facilitate markets, like the supply and demand for interesting products, and to be a normalization factor around this. Now, in the last couple of years, it really developed into purely a financial and maybe even inherent, a little bit unhealthy, just for the financial purposes driven ecosystem. Now we come back to where demand from the retail side comes to interesting products, and the marketplaces, again, are the facilitators of that. So they set up an infrastructure which allows whatever you tokenize can be traded then on the exchange. So what we do actually is we build an environment that allows us to fastly onboard interesting new products that might come just for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then they might evaporate, but still there's a purpose for that product. Might be a project financing, might be a financial product, might be an investment product, what have you. And in that sense, for me, the whole crypto and blockchain development is a development bringing exchanges back to the core of their existence, which I think you also see from the interest of classical investment banks into that, because actually a lot of exchanges started as being, let's say, a partnership of banks setting up an exchange. Then the banks got out of the exchanges. Now the banks and classical players are coming back into it because we're going back to our origins.
That's very interesting. And I mean, actually, you know, you mentioned that before about the going back, like, you know, going back to the origins of an exchange, right? And before you mentioned, I'll be some of the new products that BitMEX is looking on launching, the spot, the brokerage, custody, academy, and so on and so forth. Yeah, you know, you mentioned you're a gamer, right? And obviously in the gaming space right now, there's a very big boom on NFTs. You think we'll see ever firms like BitMEX enter the NFT world, or should we even see a derivatives world come together with the NFT world?
I think, as I said, I think important is for us, if I see it from a more broader perspective, this market operator perspective, we should be able to operate whatever products are interesting for our clients. And if NFTs are interesting for them, yes, we should be offering that. Absolutely. And I think when I look back, when we announced at Börse Stuttgart to go into tokenization, at that point in time, nobody said NFTs. We were talking about tokenization. But the first tokens that were actually addressed to me were what? Arts and luxury cars. So exactly what we call today NFTs. So in that sense, that was not really, I mean, that was a little bit maybe too tainted from the ICO world, naming wise. And now it seems to be okay-ish once again, because we call it NFT. But in a sense, it's exactly the same. I think that we'll see a magnitude of interesting assets coming from this non-fungible side. But also, if you look into gaming, I mean, this can be non-fungible, but a very, very strong gaming and trading product once again. When you see, for example, a FIFA transfer market on the weekend, this is sometimes on the size of a classical exchange market from trading volume. So you see, you might see this. You might see energy tokens. You might see mobility tokens. You might see real estate tokens. You might see property tokens. And the fundamental technology is the same. Yeah. And And this is what makes it very interesting. So I can envisage a lot of products in various markets that we market operators might offer to our clients. And what we do best is organizing markets. And this brings me back to where I started when my company I was working for was acquired, like structuring markets. This is what's really interesting. And building efficient global markets. And I think this is where we are. And these markets need education. They need information. They need then at some point in time, depending on how they are structured, derivatives products or hedging purposes or something like this to secure the product that you have there. And then you're back to this ecosystem approach, which I find is very interesting.
Absolutely. Oh, man, I think it's going to be very interesting to time to see how this evolves, right? But especially as a leader, I just want to bring it back to you right now, Alex, because, of course, you took on board the BitMEX ship, if you want, at a very tumultuous time. So, of course, there was accusation against the founders. There's a lot of change because of from that perspective, at least we can say, actually. How, as a leader, when you come on an organization like BitMEX, especially when the founders have such a big culture or very dominant, like you mentioned Archer at the beginning, how do you draw the line? How do you actually, from a leadership perspective, you act or you lead knowing the legal situation the firm was in and knowing the kind of the mess that you knew you had to fix?
Actually, there's no magic behind this. I mean, you just have to do it. I think as a leader, you have your own management style. You don't adapt to something else. You adapt to the situation, but not to somebody else. And then you have your task, you have to build out a vision, a strategy, and then you start to execute on that one. And I think when the people realize that the direction of the company is defined one, they will follow you and they will rally behind you to do this. And this is exactly what you have to do. Yes, let's say every manager who steps in after the founders has to work with his heritage. Yeah. But I think the most important thing is that you are not the founder. You're a different person. You have a different management style. You have a different, maybe a different direction or an adjusted direction, and you just follow that path. And this is very important. As easy as that. Yeah, the rest is really hard work. It's not that of a magic around this. So, yes, with great heritage comes a great obligation. Yeah, to work with this and expand on that one. But this is true for every big company and every big brand and every big name.
And you know, on this point, obviously, BitMEX obviously was the biggest crypto derivative exchange in the world. And obviously, we all know about the accusations that came out against the founders and the company. Do you think when you look at some of the other crypto derivative exchanges, you know, the FTXs, the Hobies, the Binance, actually many of them have been in the news recently as well for, you know, somewhat similar situations as well. Do you think some of the activities they're taking is really pushing the lines or actually going a big step too far with tokenized securities or other derivatives or even operating on a unregulated way? Or you think, you know, it's the same thing that happened, BitMEX may happen to them in the future?
I think I can't answer that right now. So firstly, I won't comment on anything that is with us in the US. I think generally, I mean, the regulation is evolving. And we got to be careful not to rush it too hard. I think that securities tokens or tokenized securities is definitely a different ballgame, yeah, than crypto, because most of the regulators already adapted to the crypto side. Yeah, so there is at least a legal framework in which you can operate. Let's say at least for the spot side. So brokers, spot custody is already pretty good defined. Derivatives is still an open field, so to say. There's not a lot of regulators already having tapped into that field, but you can pretty much, let's say, draw a line when you know that you're stepping maybe a little bit too aggressively. But it's really, I think that the first thing is that the regulators need to understand how it is operated, because then they can make up your mind about it. I think it's a lot has to do with transparency, yeah, and education around the stuff. But otherwise, it's a little bit hard for me to comment on that one because, as you well know and can imagine.
And what's your view? And obviously, one of the big trends we've seen the last 2-3 years, a lot of these exchanges launching exchange tokens, right? So we had the FTX with FTX tokens. We had, you know, Leo with Bitfinex. We've had many of the other, Binance actually with BNB as well. What do you think that's a trend that's going to stay? Do you think those are like, actually securities being the delivered as a token. Like, what's your view on that and on the exchange token side?
I think that an exchange or a token in itself, I think is a tremendous, powerful tool. I think also just because a lot on the ICO front was done wrongly does not mean that the instrument is the wrong one. I think the instrument is the right one. Yeah. And again, it completely goes in the same direction as change for the classical industry, a change of that world and making it available to retail clients on a broad basis and not just to the usual suspects in the IPO world is absolutely the right push. Can this push be done without any guardrails, without any regulation, without any transparency around this? No, it shouldn't. And that's what's happened. Now, coming back to your question, yes, I think it's a very interesting tool and a very powerful tool. It can address much more than an IPO can do. Yeah. But the complexity of this is also the magnitude of the possibilities. Yeah. You can embed everything in a token, and that makes it a pros and positive and negative because you have to define it in the first place. Because whatever the token is at the end is defined by that. And if you miss something, you won't be able to exploit it in the future. So this is what probably a lot of interested parties in that game have to face. And the next thing is very often this tokenization leads you to a definition of a security token or tokenized securities. And that again needs a regulatory framework, which is a little bit difficult at this point in time when you take it at least on the global basis. But I think it's a very, very interesting tool, something we are also looking at. But I think this is exactly the right time. When you look at the Coinbase IPO, and kudos to the guys for that success. Yeah. I think that an IPO, a SPAC or token sale is something each player should and has to consider because it's just too obvious that this is a powerful means and powerful tool you can use. There is, from my point of view, a big consolidation wave to come, and you need to prepare yourself for that. And these can be instruments to make sure that you're on the winning side to this.
Interesting. You mentioned Coinbase, actually. What's your view on what's happening with Coinbase, the IPO? And do you believe this is actually positive for the industry, and we will expect to see many more of these companies go public?
Firstly, congratulations to the guys. Great success. I'm a little bit torn because in a sense, IPO is old world, yeah, and they should have gone for the new world. But on the other hand, it's just too compelling not to do. Yeah. And I totally get it. Yeah. And on the other hand, it's also very positive because an IPO brings it to a broader acceptance of the mass market adoption. Yeah. And a token sale might have been more, let's say, aficionado, but an IPO was more mass market adoption. And in that sense, we should all be grateful for that IPO because it pushes the mass market adoption. But as I said, I'm a little bit torn. I would have loved a token sale, but come on. It was great. It was a great success. Yeah. And I think with the IPO, they are now on the league of the most expensive exchanges globally, which is not bad. Come on.
Exactly. That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, for you, Alex, I mean, you're such a forward-looking guy, so futuristic, and obviously very comfortable with change. It must have been hard for you at the traditional exchange at the Deutsche Börse and Stuttgart you were working on. I mean, that must have been quite a difficult personality. I mean, when I know Alex Hoppner right now, with your very being future-proof, loving crypto, both at Deutsche Börse and Stuttgart, which are great, great platforms, you must have stood out big time compared to a lot of your peers.
Well, I don't know, but let's say I'm not there anymore. It's hard to say, but
I mean, actions speak louder than words.
Yeah, that's it. No, kidding. The point is really again, you can only lead from the top. Yeah, the change needs to be led and needs to be embraced by everybody. If that is not the case, or not to the full extent the case, you need to understand that time is of essence. You don't have years now. If you don't do now, probably time is up. Even if you consider doing something end of next year, consider not doing it all, because you probably missed the train already. Yeah. And so, and this is something which is very important, and you have to understand this crypto push is moving so fast. You don't have the time. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Well, Alex, now as we close up the show, my lucky bell is with me that goes with me around the world. We're going to do the fire round of questions. So we'll ask these questions, you know, short answers, and the bell will be here to keep us in order and in time. I hope you're ready. Right. Here we go. So, Alex, what is the one hobby? What is the one thing you do when you're not working?
Gaming.
What is your favorite game as you talk about gaming?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, really? Interesting. Interesting.
I'm a role player. Even that.
Oh, that's amazing. That's love that. You go to a bar. What's your favorite drink at a bar? What's your go-to drink?
Gin tonic. Gin tonic. I'm a big gin tonic.
Gin tonic. Here we go. Favorite YouTube channel or Netflix series?
Oh. Hard. Well, it's very good. We looked at it in Netflix now. Got to look at it. Queen's Gambit. Yeah. Miniseries. Unorthodox. Very good one. So there's a lot of very good Netflix series right now.
So your kids come to you and ask you, Daddy, what is the one course we should take at university? What is the one course you recommend every university student to take today?
Tech development.
Tech development. Here we go. What is the one asset outside of Bitcoin and Ethereum that you like the most, you find the most interesting? One asset outside of Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Well, that's hard. I think from a psychological standpoint, Doge is very interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting. When you really drill into the psychologics around this, that you can write a book about it probably. Yeah, that's very interesting.
You know, that was my next question. Actually, I'm going to skip that, but I totally agree with you. I always say that, you know, anybody who's doing a PhD right now in economics or psychology or human behavior, this is absolutely a great topic Dogecoin to look at, right? So,
yeah.
Next question. Elon Musk applies to BitMEX for a job. Would you hire him, yes or no?
No.
Well, what is that?
Because I think that even with, and you got to be humble about this, yeah, even with the possibilities that BitMEX has, probably his dimension is too big, and you have to have the right role for the, so a chainsaw is not a bad tool because it doesn't get a nail to the wall. Yeah, if you have the best person in the world, it doesn't make the best team player, and it doesn't make the best quote-unquote tool. Because if you don't have the right function for the person, he will not excel on that.
I love the chainsaw analogy. If you could have lunch with one CEO, any company, any business, who would it be?
Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk?
There you go. Well, Jeff Bezos has a new yacht waiting for him, so it's a good place for it. Alex, what is keeping you up at night?
Thinking about how I make BitMEX successful.
Beautiful. And last question, I got to ask you this. Your Alex Hoppner's prediction, personal prediction on the price of Bitcoin at December 31st and in 5 years, the price of Bitcoin.
I think we can see over 100 this end of this year. I think it's possible. 5 years down the road, difficult, depends of the development. If it becomes the new goal, the price will be more stable, above the 100, but more stable. If it doesn't become the new gold, then it might be tremendously above that.
Alex, thank you very much. This was Alex Hoppner, the CEO of BitMEX. Alex, great. Thanks for being with us today. How can people find more about you? What, Twitter, LinkedIn? What is the best way?
Twitter, LinkedIn, the usual channels. Twitter, LinkedIn, Telegram, whatever you want to use. All good.
Well, Alex, thank you very much. Thanks for being with us today. This was Alex Hoppner, the CEO of BitMEX. To learn more about BitMEX, obviously, you can go on their website, bitmex.com. And for all of you listening to this, make sure you click subscribe if you like this podcast. A new episode will be released every week. Also, make sure to follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter, especially for my weekly crypto capsule show where I summarize the global crypto developments that you need to know in less than 60 seconds. And of course, don't forget to subscribe on LinkedIn to my weekly newsletter called The Future of Money, where I share the three big ideas on the future of money that you need to know each week. And of course, to finish it off as well, if you learn more about crypto, make sure to check out my YouTube channel, where I have not only videos on some of these interviews, including the one with Alex, but also a lot of crypto educational videos. And the good news now is all of my video content is also available in French, Arabic, and Mandarin Chinese across my different channels. So thank you all for joining me on my today on the episode of Future of Money podcast, and see you all next time.